What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the JT Sports Podcast. Tonight, we're joined by a special guest. We got our guy, College Football with Sam, on the pod. What's going on, man? Long time no see. How you doing?
I'm doing great. That's how I'm doing.
Hey, you're a Michigan fan. You guys are coming off a really big win. As a matter of fact, your third straight win against Ohio State and Ryan Day in the game. So I know you got to be feeling really happy. You probably ate some really good food on Thanksgiving. And, you know, overall, as a big fan of the Big Ten, how are you feeling about this conference? Not just from the play that you've seen this season, but how do you feel about the conference going into next year?
I feel very confident about the top, but I'm skeptical about the middle and the lower portions of the conference. I feel like it could be very top heavy.
Absolutely, man. Definitely feel you on that one. But you know, one thing about it, I was always going to be one of the top picks to make it out. We're going to preview the Big Ten championship game featuring Iowa, Michigan. Also going to have preview and predictions for the other four conference championship games featuring the Power 5 schools and the P5 conferences. We're going to dive into Jonathan Smith. And we got some college football playoff scenarios that we're going to be cooking up as well on this episode. If you haven't already, leave a like, subscribe to the channel. Remember that every episode of the JT Sports Podcast is available in audio format on all podcasting platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts from, you can find the JT Sports Podcast. If you enjoy, leave us with a 5-star review, share this episode with your friends, family members, and acquaintances, and make sure that you subscribe to our guy, College Football with Sam. Check out his podcast as well, College Football with Sam. We'll have that in the link in the description in the comment section down below, man. And before we begin, man, just let the people know what you got planned for the channel within the next couple of days and where they can find you at if we left out anything.
Well, I'm going to try and preview several conference championship games this week, starting with the Big Ten and Pac-12 championship, as the Pac-12 championship features two teams that'll be in the Big Ten next year. Basically features two Big Ten teams.
Okay, man. So before we begin, I got to get my water real quick. And let's get into it. So ACC championship, you got Florida State, who's unbeaten. They're trying to hang on to their lives for the college football playoffs. And they're a 2.5-point favorite, Sam. But they have a really tough game ahead of them going against Louisville with Jeff Brohm as their head coach. And Jeff Brohm has a nickname, Sam. I think you're pretty familiar with it. They consider this dude to be the upset master because he's really good at pulling off huge upsets. He was the former head coach at Purdue when they upset Ohio State and Dwayne Haskins a few years back, ended their college football playoff hopes. Can they do the same against Florida State? I guess we will see. And when you look at Florida State, they seem to be one of the most talented teams in college football. When you just look at their roster top to bottom, great receivers. They got a really good offensive line. Their defense is also really talented as well. They play complementary football. They can run the football. But can they throw it effectively in this game with Tate Rodemaker at quarterback? What are your thoughts on the Seminoles heading into this championship bout?
I think that their concern is actually in the run game because Louisville's a physical team. I mean, Jawar Jordan's rushed for over 1,000 yards and 13 touchdowns. Isaac Garendo has over 500 rushing yards. Louisville on the season is averaging 4.9 yards per carry. They've ran for 2,200 yards on the season. They're one of the best teams in terms of rushing touchdowns and rushing offense. I think for Florida State, the concern is not just about the upset, but could Louisville out-physical you in the trenches? And they might have the better quarterback as well, since Travis is sadly injured. However, I do think Florida State's overall the better team. And Louisville, I think, got caught napping against Kentucky. So, who knows?
And when you look at the quarterback comparison between Tate Rodemaker and Jack Plummer, Jack Plummer, he's not bad, but at the same time, he's not necessarily all that great. And he can kind of be a little bit streaky during games at times. I'm eager to see how both of these teams find ways to ease their quarterbacks into this game, try to ease some of those championship jitters. With Florida State, them having a more talented team, you think that they should be able to do an easier job of that with Rodemaker since they got a more talented roster. But Jeff Brohm, he's no stranger to these kinds of games. You know, yeah, this is his first season in the ACC, but this is somebody who knows what it takes to win big games. He's proven to pull off big-time upsets several times throughout his coaching tenure. And a while back, they got a really big win against Notre Dame at home when Notre Dame was a top-10 team in the country. They also got a really impressive win when they blew out Duke 23-0. This is a Louisville team that, yeah, they don't match up with Florida State when it comes to a talent standpoint. But as you said, they're really physical. They're really good against the run. They play really good defense, and they're a really well-coached ball club. What do you think is the key for both of these teams finding a way to win this game?
The key for Louisville is run the ball consistently. And the key for Florida State is to, I think, not fall behind early. Because I think if it's a very even matchup and Florida State's able to stay comfortable for all four quarters, at the bare minimum, their superior depth will show and they'll win. I mean, look against Florida. Florida got up, I think, by double digits, but Florida State's better depth and coaching allowed them to pull themselves up on the road. Also, you can thank Billy Napier for the horrible play calling, but I think Florida State's the better team than Louisville. And I think unless Louisville jumps out to a big lead and makes Florida State uncomfortable, the Seminoles will probably pull it out and win.
So you're taking Florida State to win this game?
I would lean toward that, yes. I'm actually going to be previewing this game with a guy named Marcus Maselli, who has a highlight channel called Markishimo about Florida State. So I'll be making like a score prediction there on that live show tomorrow. But I'm leaning toward Florida State because I know people want them to lose because they're not a supposed dead weight in the playoff. But I think against a team like Louisville, they can win. And I think they're well coached enough and versatile enough at skill position. I mean, Trey Benson, one missed tackle and he's gone. Louisville can't afford to make mistakes if they want to win. Florida State can probably afford to get down or make a few mistakes and at least squeak out a win. So I'd take Florida State to win.
You're taking Florida State?
Yep.
I'm taking Louisville. I'm going with Jeff Brohm, the upset master. Listen, they don't call this dude the upset master for no reason. Okay, this dude knows how to pull off upsets. He knows how to end teams' playoff hopes. He's done it in the past, and I believe he's going to do it again. Look, Louisville, they may not be as talented as what Florida State is, but they're a well-coached team. As long as Jack Plummer can take care of the football and he's accurate and he isn't having any of those games where he just looks out of sorts, Louisville should be able to pull off this win. Even though it is going to be a really close game, the point spread in this game is only Florida State -2.5 for a reason. Vegas knows about the upset master, and I think that they're probably banking on him having this Louisville team up for this game. Yeah, they suffered a really disappointing loss to their rival Kentucky, but the thing with Jeff Brohm is that this dude is always going to have your team ready to play in any big-time game, and I don't think it's going to be any different for this one. So I have to go with Florida State to get the win. Well, for them to get the loss in this one, I think this is going to be their first loss of the season. And I believe that Louisville is going to end up ending their playoff hopes. It's like you came so far just to crash and burn at the end. Of course, you're probably hoping that that doesn't happen if you're a Seminoles fan. But I really like Jeff Brohm. And this dude has yet to prove me wrong. I took them against Notre Dame. I took them against Duke. And I'm taking them again to pull off another upset and end the college football playoff dreams of the FSU Florida State Seminoles this year. We got the Big Ten championship game. You got Michigan, who's on top of the world after beating Ohio State for the third straight year in a row. And then you got Iowa. And you know what you get out of Iowa? They got fantastic defense, but they don't give a damn about offense, Sam. And Michigan is a large favorite in this game. They're a 3-touchdown favorite heading into this matchup. You're going to have Coach Harbs back on the sideline. Of course, this team is going to be super amped up, super juiced up. But tell us something about this Iowa team that possibly people are overlooking and why maybe this could be a game that could be a lot closer than what people expect it to be.
Probably the rushing attack. LaShawn Williams and Caleb Johnson. I would say they're tight ends, but they're banged up.
And it's like what I was like, you know, their defense is going to be good enough. I have seen Iowa be able to take teams to the brink at times, but it's just with their offense being so garbage, it's like your defense is pretty much your best offense at times. And if Iowa's going to be able to pull off this upset, they got to find a way to make this a one-dimensional Michigan team. One thing that Michigan does a really good job at, better than any other team in the country, is being able to play complementary football. And the reason why I picked Ohio State to pull off the upset against Michigan last week was because I thought that if Ohio State could do a good job at limiting the run game and they force it to be a game where J.J. McCarthy has to beat them with his arm, I didn't know if they were going to be able to pull off the win, but they were able to play a complimentary game. J.J. McCarthy had a really nice showing. But Iowa's defense, do you expect them to be able to show up in this game, or do you just think that this is going to be a bludgeoning from the opening kickoff?
They'll show up, but it won't matter. I mean, Michigan is the best team they've played all season long. They're much better than Penn State, and Penn State killed this team. They were on the field for 45 minutes. I know Iowa was injured and banged up then, so they're more accustomed to their current roster now. But I can't see them moving Michigan up and down the field. I can't do it. And with Cooper DeJean being out, I think J.J. McCarthy will even be able to throw on them, not just the offense being able to run the ball. I think this would be a pretty severe blowout. But at the same time, I could see Michigan resting a lot of their starters, and maybe they don't cover the spread, or it's not as big of a win as I think it will be. But Michigan will win here. I'm pretty confident in that. This is probably the worst. Yeah, this is the worst matchup of championship game participants in the Power Five, easily.
So it seems like you're going with Michigan to get the win. I'm going with Michigan to get the win also. Like, Iowa fans, I tried. You know, I tried to give you a little bit of attention. I tried to find a way for you guys to pull this win out. But it's really difficult to be the team like Michigan and you have zero offense. And the only way Iowa has a shot at winning this game is if their defense has one of those performances where they force 4-5 turnovers. They're able to get their offense into favorable field position. They can find a way to get a couple of touchdowns on the board. But outside of that, when you have a non-existent offense, and I've seen some really bad offenses. Trust me, I'm a Steelers fan. I know a lot about bad offenses. But I mean, holy cow, Sam. It's just, does Iowa even give a fuck about offense? Honestly, because it seems like they don't.
They do just enough to where Brian Ferentz isn't returning next season, but that's not saying, that's not saying much. I mean, let's just look at their quarterback play statistics. I mean, Deacon Hill has 5 passing touchdowns, 6 interceptions. He has only 976 passing yards. He's completing 48% of his passes, and he has a 22.4 quarterback efficiency rating. I mean, it's pathetic. He is pathetic. Their offense is pathetic. Michigan will win. And if Michigan doesn't cover the spread, Michigan fans better hope it's because we took all of our starters out after halftime.
Michigan State made a big-time hire when they got Jonathan Smith to leave Oregon State. His alma mater, by the way, a school that he played quarterback for and led them to a good amount of success at. He comes to Spartanville, and I think that this is a fantastic hire by Michigan State. People seem to forget that this was a team that went to the college football playoffs a while back. And they had the facilities. I do think that they got a pretty good donor base because it seemed like they were pretty sold on Mel Tucker and giving him anything that he needed to succeed. And with the Big Ten having the new arrivals in 2024 of USC, UCLA, Washington, and Oregon, you need to make this kind of hire to bring in a coach of this stature, where, like Jonathan Smith, who has a good track record of being able to turn programs around. Because when Oregon State got there, they were in the bottom of the barrel. And his last two seasons, he goes 10-3 in 2022, 8-4 this past season. How fast do you think he's going to be able to turn around this Michigan State program? Do you think he can have these boys up and running next season, being able to compete for this conference? Or do you think it'll probably take a couple of years or so?
I think it'll take him a couple of years to get them built up, just because Michigan State is, I mean, Mel Tucker didn't do much in retrospect. He got a magical back in Kenneth Walker, and you watch them play this season, quarterback play, horrid. That's why all the quarterbacks are in the transfer portal. Wide receiver, along with the defensive front, was probably the only highlight. And I expect some of those guys to come back. I think that with Jonathan Smith, Michigan State will reach the 12-team playoff a few times if he stays there. I think it's a really good hire. I think he's going to make him great. And I'm just saying, this might be a topic for another day, but if you're Penn State and you're looking for that new OC, you have to make that right hire, because the window might be closing on you. It's getting old every single year when people tell me that James Franklin is an elite head coach. It's getting old. And for Michigan State to make that hire, I know it sounded like I was going off topic there, but it's not, because Michigan State has a chance to leapfrog some programs like Wisconsin or Minnesota, or, dare I say it, depending on circumstance, Penn State, because they've been that low over the past two seasons, and they've kind of fallen back down to that pre-Mark D'Antonio level, where they're a team who struggles to make a bowl game every season. I think it was a phenomenal hire. I think it's might be the best hire of the entire 2023-2024 coaching carousel. I think it's better than the Elko hire. And it was a right place, right time type of thing.
With Jonathan Smith being at Michigan State, is this somebody who, if you're Ryan Day, Jim Harbaugh, you should be really worried about?
You should be concerned. I think really worried is too far. We have to see how he does in year one and year two. I said I was scared in my video reviewing the hire, but I made sure to state that I'm not terrified, because in order for me to be terrified of you with the state that Michigan's at right now, I have to see some progress in year one and year two. I'm not going to, with the way that Michigan and Ohio State are functioning, they're machines. These are teams that, if they continue to do what they've done over the past half a decade, they're national title contenders every season. But I just like the Jonathan Smith hire, and he brought his entire offensive staff with him, an offense that I think was top 10 when they were actually trying.
And I'm really hoping that he somehow finds a way to bring Aiden Childs with him, because this is somebody who has a lot of upside and a lot of potential, and we're yet to see him hit the transfer portal. But even if he can't get Aiden Childs, there are a lot of good transfer portal quarterbacks to pick from. Of course, we all know that he pulled DJ Uiagalelei out of the transfer portal. He was pretty solid. I think his stats are a little bit oversaturated, but there's a better class of quarterbacks to choose from in this transfer portal cycle. If he's able to land maybe like a Tyler Van Dyke or a Will Howard, you know, you definitely like, you know, how the quarterback situation looks going into 2024. And a conference where the quarterback play hasn't really been all that strong. Drew Aller, I mean, he was okay, but he looked awful against Michigan, looked awful against Ohio State. And then Talia Tagovailoa, I mean, this dude just crumbles in big games. So if you can land one of the top-notch quarterbacks out of the transfer portal cycle, if you're Jonathan Smith, I think that'd be very huge for him. And, you know, Michigan State, they're one of those sleeping giant programs, kind of similar to Arizona State. You get the right head coach in there that really knows how to get the most out of the donors, really knows how to recruit in the area. There's a really high chance that Michigan State could be competing for Big Ten titles with this hire. Like, I was a huge fan of Jonathan Smith. Really sad to see him leave from Oregon State. But, of course, we pretty much saw the writing on the wall when, once it was announced that the Pac-12 was disbanding and Oregon State wasn't going to get admitted into another Power 5 conference. So, the fact that he went to Michigan State, what has you excited the most about what he brings to this program? Is it his offense, the recruiting, or just his ability to build up a winning culture?
It's the offense. It's the power spread and the strong O-line play, the tight ends. Because Harbaugh, he could be gone after this season. And I told some friends, or we talked, that Jonathan Smith would be one of the first coaches that we would want to be interviewed by Michigan. Because the offense and the his defenses have been some of the best in the Pac-12 as well. That's what I'm excited for, is to see. I think Michigan State had potential in the trenches this season, but their coaching was just awful. I'm curious to see what some transfer additions and good coaching can do to some of the potential I saw on this year's team.
All right, everybody. So if you haven't already, make sure that you go ahead, check out our guy, College Football with Sam. He has a lot of great college football content up there. He covers the Big Ten, but he also branches out there, covers the Pac-12 a lot with USC, UCLA, Washington, and Oregon joining the conference. And this dude has one of the most relaxing voices that you will ever find. I mean, I love listening to this dude's videos late at night when I'm trying to go to bed. This dude just has a calm, relaxing voice, like one of those kind of voices that you hear when you got somebody reading out those audiobooks out loud. Make sure that you guys go ahead, check out my guy, College Football with Sam. Subscribe to his channel if you haven't already. He has the best college football content on YouTube, in my opinion. Go ahead and give our guy a subscribe. And also make sure that you go ahead and rate his podcast 5 stars as well on Apple and Spotify. You can find College Football with Sam on those podcasting platforms. Also, Oklahoma State taking on Texas, Big 12 championship matchup. You look at Texas. This has been probably one of the most consistent teams in all of college football this season. Yeah, they lost to Oklahoma. They had a scare against Kansas State. But other than those two games, this has been a really consistent squad. Even without Quinn Ewers, they were still pretty good. Even with Malik Murphy not really having the best of performances, they got a great defense. They got a really good offensive line, talented wide receivers. This is one of the most talented teams in all of college football. They're just as talented as Georgia, in my opinion. Oklahoma State, on the other hand, they're a team that started out slow. You know, I'm going to be honest, I was coming out here saying that maybe it was time to move on from Mike Gundy once they got embarrassed by South Alabama. But to their credit, they were able to weather the storm. And although they don't really got a good quarterback, I think their quarterback is okay. Their star player is Ollie Gordon II. When he's rolling, this is a really tough team to stop. They got a really good offensive line. And their wide receivers are pretty good also. They just don't really have the quarterback. And Texas, it's really important that they find a way to limit the amount of big games that Ali Gordon is able to generate, because this dude is able to just get big yards after big yards on nearly every single carry. He's averaging 6.4 yards per attempt. And if Texas can't find a way to slow this dude down, it could be a very long afternoon for them. But if they can find a way to neutralize Ali Gordon's effectiveness, and they make this a game where Oklahoma State has to lean more into the passing game, this probably could be a one-sided affair. But if Ali Gordon gets going, this probably could be a really tightly contested ball game.
Yeah, Texas, 11-1, 8-1 in conference. You only lost to Oklahoma, who's 10-2, and might find their way into a New Year's Six Bowl, depending on how many upsets happen. But at least they'll find their way into the Alamo Bowl, which is pretty good. I think they're deep. Your statement on them being one of the most consistent teams in football is actually good. It's a correct statement, because they're number two in game control and they're number five in adjusted in-game win probability. That technically makes them a better team by game control metrics than Georgia, like a more consistent team than Georgia, which is fascinating, seeing that Georgia is undefeated and has also played some pretty good opponents. But I think that is mostly because Texas controlled Alabama. They were in that game with Oklahoma, and they've played a lot of close games, but those games are close because of bad second half performances. Texas always jumps out to a quick lead, controls the second half enough to not lose, but has scares. Like TCU, they could have lost that game. Or Kansas State, if not for a dumb four-yard line. I don't even know what that call was. They could have lost that game, but they didn't. And if they win this game and they get 12 wins and they're Big 12 champions, they're not guaranteed to get in, but they'll be back because they'd have beaten a good team on the road. They'll have won their conference. They'd have done as much as they could have, realistically, to reach the playoff, because I don't think anyone, rightfully so, was thinking that this team has to go 13-0. There were still holes. I think that Texas is going to win. I know I'm picking a lot of favorites here, but this has not been an upset-heavy season, and you can see that by how many undefeated playoff contenders there are. This has not been a season of upsets.
Yeah, like, you go Texas, I lean Texas too. Even though I'm not super convinced that Texas is a lock to win this game, and if I was betting on this, I probably would smack Oklahoma State with the plus 14.5. You see, Oklahoma State, they don't have a great defense, but they are really good at forcing turnovers, and they also are a team that doesn't get penalized all that often, which is a recipe for a team that you don't want to turn the football over against. Texas, they can be really streaky at times, okay? We know they do have one of the most talented teams in the sport, but they don't necessarily always play like it, okay? And Quinn Ewers, I like him a lot, but sometimes he can start off a little slow, similar to Michael Penix, and he can have stretchers during the games where he just goes ice cold. And then these receivers, they're talented. We know about James Worthy. We know about Isaiah Nayer and A.D. Mitchell. But sometimes they kind of can struggle with the dropsies as well. But I'm looking at Texas, and with how good their run defense is, and the fact that Oklahoma State, in my opinion, is kind of a one-trick pony, if they can't get Ali Gordon going, which there's a strong chance that he kind of gets stifled in this game, with Texas having the fourth-best run defense in the nation, I don't really see Oklahoma State being able to pull off this win unless their defense comes through and forces turnovers, which does have a good chance at happening. Give me Texas to win. 31-24 is probably going to be my final score prediction for this matchup. I'm taking the Longhorns, and it seems like you pretty are high on them as well for them to win this matchup.
Yes, I don't think they're one of the four best teams in America right now, but I do think they'll win this game.
SEC championship game, This is a really interesting one. Because Alabama, coming into this season, most people thought that it was over for the Alabama dynasty. And I don't think too many people thought that Alabama would even be playing in this game. You lost to Texas at home, and then you have the inconsistent, rocky quarterback play. Of course, we all remember that infamous USF game where Jalen Milroe didn't suit up to play. And then ever since then, Jalen Milroe has played his best football. And it seems like this dude has been getting better every single week. Meanwhile, you look at Georgia. And of course, coming into this season, you had the big question, are they going to be able to three-peat? And I can't remember the last time there's ever been a team in college football to three-peat. I probably wasn't around or born during that time when that happened. But Georgia has a damn good chance of being able to do it. Alabama, you know, they had that close game against Auburn, and it had that wild ending. Like, of course, Auburn had to find a way to lose that game in that fashion. But you see, Alabama was in a similar situation a couple of years ago when they struggled in the Iron Bowl. It took them multiple overtime periods to pull off that win. And then they smacked Georgia in the SEC championship, which was a fantastic performance out of Bryce Young. And we know to beat Georgia, you need to have great quarterback play. You need to have a quarterback that can make NFL-level throws. And Jalen Milroe, he's really weird. Because I don't think he's the best quarterback when it comes to operating in the quick passing game. I think his accuracy when it comes to his short and intermediate passing needs a lot of improvement. But he's better throwing the deep ball than he is throwing short passes and medium passes, which is something that is really weird because you don't really see that all that often. Normally, you see quarterbacks who struggle with the quick passing game, who also struggle to throw the ball downfield, but this dude has one of the best deep balls in the nation. And of course, we know how dynamic of an athlete he is, especially when he decides to tuck the ball and he gets into the open field. I've compared him to Lamar Jackson. Georgia, this defense, they've shut down some of the best offenses in all of college football. They stifled Ole Miss. They stifled Tennessee, even though Tennessee's offense hasn't been that great. And Missouri had a lot of difficulty against this defense as well. And this Georgia defense, they're not as good as what they've been in previous years. You know, they've had two historically great defenses. But I do think that this defense is a little bit underrated. The secondary at times can be a little bit prone to give up a couple of big plays here and there. But for the most part, this is a really talented group. The thing that concerns me, though, is that Alabama's defense is really good. Okay, and I would say that Alabama's defense has played better than Georgia's defense this year. And at times, you know, this defense has given up big plays, like against Tennessee, and they went into halftime down 20-7 in that game. And then they came back and they pretty much obliterated Tennessee in the second half. And they shut down Ole Miss the same way that Georgia shut down Ole Miss. Their offense just wasn't as consistent now as what it was earlier this season. Meanwhile, you look at Georgia, this has been a well-oiled machine since the first game of the season, pretty much, for Georgia. And Georgia's a 6-point favorite in this game. But as we know, this game is probably going to be a lot closer than what a lot of people expect. Because it seems like a lot of people are pretty convinced that Georgia's going to win this game and they're going to dominate. But I don't know, like, I don't really think that this is going to be a game that Georgia's just going to pummel Alabama. And I'm not picking anybody to win this game right now. I'm just saying that I think Georgia's in for a really big battle. This is probably going to be the closest game that they've played in all season long. And people seem to forget that Alabama's recruiting classes haven't ranked no less than 3 or better the last couple of years. So in terms of where these teams match up from a talent standpoint, they're about dead even. But my concern for Alabama is that damn offensive line. You see, their offensive line has played really good the last couple of weeks, but their pass protection still is a little bit inconsistent to me. And you wonder how they're going to hold up against the best defensive line that they faced up against in Georgia. So how are you feeling about this game? Like, do you think that this is going to be a potential Georgia blowout? or you think that Alabama is going to be able to have a shot at winning this thing?
It won't be a Georgia blowout. I think that would, I think that's pretty unrealistic. And the reason for that is Georgia's defense has a problem. Their secondary, I think, is the best in the country. And I could be, it's either them or Ohio State. I'll put them tied first because they have, neither of them's faced a elite passing offense. And I think that would be the only way you could test those secondaries. They struggle, though, at stopping the run. And the only reason teams haven't gashed Georgia on the ground is they respect Georgia. They still think that Georgia has this elite defensive line. I mean, you can look at teamrankings.com. Georgia is top 25 in opponent rush play percentage. Opponents don't even run the football for more than 45% of the time on Georgia. They don't, because they envision those Jalen Carters and Trayvon Walkers and Nolan Smiths. They don't have that player this year. If you consistently run on Georgia, I guarantee you that you can control them. Like, you can control TOP. You can dictate the game outside of Brock Bowers, because I don't think anyone can cover him. The reason I favor Georgia, though, despite their defensive struggles, is Alabama. This is a fun fact. Jalen Milroe has less passing attempts than J.J. McCarthy. Less passing attempts per game. He throws less than J.J. McCarthy does, because they feed him the deep ball, and only the deep ball. Georgia's strength is their pass defense and their secondary. Milroe will have to beat them with his legs and the quick pass. He will not be able to get big plays on them. Plus, Georgia's offense, they have the best O-line in the country, except for maybe Oregon's or Oregon State's. They can run the ball. They can pass. Carson Beck isn't phased. And Alabama, their defense also has a weakness in stopping the run, and they're not as good at stopping the pass. I just think Georgia is better slightly or by a good margin in probably every way outside of pass rush and linebacker play, because Dallas Turner's that good. So I lean Georgia personally.
Yeah, like, I got to go with Georgia too. You know, I'm not surprised that Alabama has made it to this point. I expected them to win the SEC West before the season, and I'm glad I picked them, because I dumbly enough almost picked Texas A&M. Glad I didn't make that mistake, boy. I would have made a fool of myself, wouldn't I?
Yeah.
And it's just, I feel this is Nick Saban's best coaching job. And I want to give him a round of applause for what he's done. Like, he probably won't win Coach of the Year. They're probably going to give it to somebody else. But in terms of what the expectations were for Bama this year, I mean, there were people who thought that they potentially could have lost 3, maybe 4 games this season. Now, of course, I would ask if those guys were sober, you feel me, when they were making those statements. But I just look at Alabama. This is a team that has gotten better every single week. And college football is one of those sports that you can only judge teams based on what they show you throughout a week-to-week basis. The same Bama team that we saw almost lose to Auburn isn't going to be the same Bama team that shows up in this SEC championship game. And we've seen plenty of times, like a couple of years ago, when Bryce Young led Bama to that upset win over Georgia. People thought that Georgia was going to beat the shit out of Bama that year. And Alabama surprised them. And Alabama plays their best football in big games. And this is definitely a team that has grown throughout the season. They've gotten more comfortable in their identity. It seems like their coaching staff hires have looked paid off really well. Like, a lot of people weren't really high on Tommy Rees or Kevin Still. And both of those guys have done a fantastic job on the respective sides of the football. But when I look at Georgia, the way Carson Beck is playing, this dude is like a machine. He doesn't get rattled. He's always composed. The moment is never too big for him. And I know Bama fans are going to get upset with me, but I picked Georgia because Jalen Milroe, he's not good enough as a passer for Bama to win this game. And when you look at the games that Georgia has lost or the games that have come down to the wire, they've lost or they've nearly come close to losing games where they've gone up against fantastic quarterback play. For example, when they almost lost to Ohio State last year in the semifinal, CJ Stroud had the greatest game that we've ever seen this dude ever play. Same thing with Bryce Young. Bryce Young had a historical performance. Same thing with Joe Burrow. If you want to beat Georgia, you can't just be good at running the football. You got to have a quarterback that is efficient throwing the football. And it can't just be overly relying on deep passing plays. It's really strange to me how Jalen Milroe throws the deep ball more accurately than how he throws short and intermediate passes. It's really strange to me. Now, he has improved in those areas, but if Bama can't find a way to get him in that run game going and this becomes a game where they just have to overly rely on him to win it throwing, like how they kind of had to do when they lost to Texas, they're going to be in a lot of trouble. Oh, yeah. I like Georgia to win this game. I'll take them to win 24-14 is my final score prediction in this game. I do think that Alabama's defense will show up to play. My thing with Alabama's defense is that they are really good, but their secondary at times does give up a couple of big plays here and there. It seems to happen nearly every single game, and it makes Nick Saban livid. But Georgia, I not only think they're going to win the SEC championship this year, but I also think they're going to end up three-peating this year. I said that before the season, and I'm not changing my sentiment on that. I still believe this is the best team in college football, and they're going to have a chance to show it against a really good, well-coached Alabama team. Final Pac-12 championship game that we're ever going to watch. And Sam, I don't know about you, but I'm holding back tears right now. I really can't believe the Pac-12 is about to be over. This is the last game of Pac-12 football that we are about to see, Sam.
It's different.
It hurts because this conference has been so damn good this season. Like, I don't know what it is about Pac-12 after dark, but it just always has me glued to my television after 10:30 p.m. And you look at these two teams. Not just is this the final Pac-12 championship game ever, but the winner of this game gets a spot in the college football playoffs. That's just such a great way to go out. You're going to have one of these teams playing in the college football playoffs, and both of these two teams are good enough to win it all this year. But what surprises me, and I don't know if it surprises you, Oregon is a 9.5-point favorite, Sam. And it really confuses me because people make it seem like Washington is overrated. They're undefeated for a reason. Of course, they don't have the same level of dominance in their wins that Oregon has, and they pretty much played the same amount of teams. Utah got dominated by Oregon. Washington didn't really dominate USC, but Oregon didn't dominate them neither. And Washington had a really impressive defensive performance, not just against Washington, but against Oregon State as well. And while you can say that Oregon has played their best football ever since they lost to Washington, you know, you look back at that game and a lot of people make excuses for Oregon losing that game, saying that the play calling was a little bit questionable in their fourth down situations. They went for it on fourth down a good amount of times. They went for it before a halftime instead of opting to get the field goal. And Dan Lanning was really aggressive. And a lot of people believe that Dan Lanning has learned from his mistakes. And I agree with that. But I'm tired of people making it seem like Washington doesn't have Michael Penix, who along with Bo Nix is most likely going to be a Heisman finalist. Like, they don't have one of the best receiving corps in college football. Anything that Oregon has, Washington has, minus the defense. And Washington's defense isn't bad. I mean, their defense was good enough to stop Oregon in several fourth down situations the last time they played. And I know in games like this, very rarely do you see teams beat the same opponent within the season twice. But Oregon, I definitely think there's a good chance they lose this game. And for Washington, with the fact that they start out slow at times and Michael Penix can look a little bit streaky, that probably is a reason why a lot of people are picking Oregon to win. But I don't know. Like, I really feel like Washington is being severely overlooked and underestimated. Even if they lose, I don't think Oregon's going to walk in and bully them and just obliterate them. Washington is a damn good team, but am I tripping? Yeah.
No, because Washington has a schematic advantage over Oregon. Oregon's the much better team. That's why they're favored. But Oregon likes to run the ball, and they will run the ball. Washington can pass the entire game and be good at it. And Oregon's weakness defensively is their secondary, because they're not healthy there, and they haven't they I mean, they lost, what was his name, Christian Gonzalez
to the NFL last year. Yep.
Yes, exactly. And they're all transfers. So I mean, Oregon's strength is pass rush, run stop. What Lanning has built at Oregon is basically last year's Georgia team. That's what I love about them. They literally look like last year's Georgia, where they're killer efficient offensively. They have an even better quarterback, better wide receiver core. Obviously, they don't have Brock Bowers or Darnell Washington. Elite O-line, better running back room. They're like last year's Georgia, but with the Walmart version of that defense, with probably a better pass rush, but a better offense. I have them as my... I have them in a special tier, really. It's them and Michigan I have in my own rankings as like the two best teams in the country. Washington will be able to use their receivers to target Oregon's secondary, and Oregon with Lanning will want to run the football, even if it sometimes works to their detriment, because Washington's weakness on defense is also defending the pass. They have a worse pass defense than even Oregon does. But matchups are a lot in college football, but they don't always determine game outcomes. An example of this is Georgia-Ohio State last season, which you were just talking about. Ohio State had a schematic advantage, and they had a perimeter play advantage. The problem is Georgia was the mentally and physically tougher team, and they were better coached all season long and on the defensive side of the ball. So they won. While Washington, I think, is better coached than Oregon, they have a more experienced head coach, better staff. Oregon is that much more talent. And it's hard to beat a great team twice unless you have some kind of outright advantage, or you're straight up the better team. It's hard to be the worst team and beat the superior team twice. So I think Oregon wins. But I think it's close. I'd be inclined to pick like 34-27 or probably 35-28 Oregon or something.
Man, I'm probably going to regret this, but I'm taking Washington. Bro, I think a lot of people are really sleeping on Washington. Like, Washington has one of the best offensive lines in college football. And the fact that they just choose to throw the football when they have a really good running back, and they're good enough to run it if they want to as well. This is a well-balanced team. It's just that they just choose to air the football a lot, because when you got three NFL-caliber wide receivers, a first-round-caliber quarterback, and Michael Penix, fuck it, why not just air the football out? But what kind of concerns me about Washington is that they start out really slow in a lot of their games, or they'll get out to a fast start and then they'll kind of go a little bit cold. And Michael Penix, he normally starts games out pretty cold, and then he starts to heat up as the game moves along. But I don't think we're going to see that same kind of performance out of him in this Washington offense in this game against Oregon. I think they're going to come out guns blazing. And the last time these two teams played, Oregon couldn't stop these wide receivers for jack squat. And I don't really see that changing. Their secondary is not good enough to contain this passing attack. Oregon State was able to slow Washington down, but I think that was more due to the weather conditions and them playing on the road. Washington State did the same thing, and that was a rivalry game. But I just think styles make fights, and I really think that Washington has Oregon's number. Oregon has Bo Nix, and of course, you could say that they outplayed Washington in their previous matchup. They were better in third down situations. They were more efficient, but were... Washington had Oregon beat was in the crucial late game decisions. Oregon went 0-3 and fourth down situations. Meanwhile, Washington, in their last game, when they were put in fourth down situations, they came through two times out of three. And I really believe that this Washington team is being heavily overlooked. And I think that they're just as good as what Oregon is. I don't really think that any team really has the talent advantage, in my opinion. Because if you were to go position by position, they're pretty much evenly matched outside of the defensive line and their linebackers. That's about it. I don't think either one of these teams has tremendous secondary play. And we're probably not going to see great secondary play out of either one with how good the quarterback play is and how good these receivers are for both teams. But I like Washington to win again. I'm going to take them to win 42-38. That's my final score prediction. A game like this really comes down to who's going to have the ball last. And if Washington gets the ball last, like how they did last time, I like them to win.
Yeah, that's understandable because last season, Oregon was also the better team in terms of talent, at least at the time they met up, and Washington won. I think there's something to that coaching advantage for the Huskies. I just think Dan Lanning's a good coach. Although, you know, Ryan Day lost to his rival three times in a row, and I still think he's an elite head coach. So Dan Lanning can do the same, and my opinion of him won't change.
The final college football playoff rankings got released after championship weekend. We're going to have Selection Sunday. I want to cook up a couple of some playoff chaos scenarios out there. So let's start off with this one, right? Let's say FSU falls to Louisville in the upset master. What does that mean for who's going to get that last remaining spot? So Washington and Oregon, whoever wins that game, we know is pretty much in. Michigan is pretty much a lock to beat Iowa. And let's say Georgia beats Alabama. FSU loses. Does Ohio State get in at four? Because they still have a pretty good chance at getting in. They got like a 20-something percent chance of making it. Don't know how the hell that can happen. You got Texas, who if they are able to beat Oklahoma State, they're going to be in that debate. Along with, let's say, okay, yeah, if Georgia wins, Michigan wins, and whoever wins the Pac-12 championship, you're pretty much going to have your first three spots taken. And then it's going to come down to who gets in that four. How do you think that plays out?
It's so interesting because it depends. Pac-12 winner, you could get two Pac-12 teams in that scenario. You could. You could get a 12-1 Washington. I could see them putting over Ohio State. And the reason I say that is because look at the college football playoff rankings. There are two Pac-12 teams ranked ahead of Ohio State. If Oregon wins in a close game, like by a field goal, it's so tough because there's Texas too. If Oregon wins in a close game, I don't think Ohio State gets in. I think if you're Ohio State, you got to rely on basically Michigan, Washington, Georgia to win, and then Florida State and Texas to lose. I mean, Texas might be able to win, and because of how Ohio State's ranked ahead of them, maybe Ohio State would get in over them, and there's just nothing Texas can do except hope for total chaos. That I found weird. Part of me thought that Texas would be ranked ahead of Ohio State in the playoff rankings, but they're not. And I don't think they should be because I think Ohio State's that good and they've played a great schedule. In your scenario where only Florida State loses and basically everything else stays constant, I would say that's Georgia, Michigan, Pac-12 champion, depending on the score, maybe two. There's so much. Can you give me more details on that scenario? Because if Texas barely beats Oklahoma State, I could see them saying, no, we're putting Ohio State in here. We're sorry.
Well, it's the thing with Texas is that if they beat Oklahoma, they have another game that you can use, another data point. And you used to hear this argument a lot with why people were reluctant to include Notre Dame because oftentimes when they got into the playoffs, they didn't have that conference championship game that they played in, so they didn't have that extra data point. So if Ohio State does have that extra data point, and let's say Texas wins, the committee does seem to favor Ohio State as high as what they do because of their strength of resume, their strength of schedule. But with Texas having that win over Oklahoma State, you will have an added boost to their strength of record and their strength of schedule, with Oklahoma being ranked inside the top 25. And for Ohio State to really get in, this is my second playoff scenario, like, you really need Alabama to beat Georgia. And then you need Texas to lose to Oklahoma State. And then you need FSU to lose. Because if Georgia loses, then you're going to have the argument of, okay, do we need to, is a SEC team even good enough to get in with a one-loss Georgia? Do you still include them with a one-loss Alabama, with how tough their schedule has been as well, with all the good SEC teams that they beat, such as Ole Miss, and then you'll have that win over Georgia? It'll be hard not to put Alabama in, especially if Florida State loses, because that will open up another spot. And then for Texas, okay, if they're able to beat Oklahoma State, then that argument is going to be, oh, well, Texas has to head-to-head. But at the same time, you know, Washington, Oregon is pretty much a set in stone that whoever wins the Pac-12 championship is going to be in. So at that point, you're either going to have Alabama, you're probably going to have Michigan at one, Washington or Oregon are probably going to be at two. And then, you know, 3 and 4, I can see Ohio State getting in one of those spots. It's just that Ohio State really needs a lot of madness to happen during conference championship weekend for them to get in. Like, they need a lot of help. You pretty much need FSU to lose, which I think has a great chance of happening. You'll need Alabama to lose, and then you'll probably need Texas to lose. Just even though if Texas wins, you still will have a favorable argument. But it's just for Ohio State, you don't need Texas to have any argument over you getting in at all. Like, you need Texas to have that second loss so they can just be disqualified from it all. And yes, for Ohio State, it's just, you don't have that extra data point. So you're going to need a team like Texas to lose in a conference championship game so you can say, man, we only got one loss. They got two. And our worst loss was to Michigan. Their worst loss is to Oklahoma State in Oklahoma. So there's no way you can really put them in.
Yeah. I feel like with Ohio State, the reason they're ranked that high is Michigan is, for most people, it's Michigan and Georgia are in a tier of their own, and almost no one comes close. For Ohio State to play Michigan the way they did was very impressive. I mean, it even impressed me. I on a personal level, wouldn't want to see that team match up with Michigan again. From a standpoint of, I'd get more views, this would be awesome, and competition, I'd love it. But they could beat Michigan. They could beat Georgia. Ohio State could beat anyone. And I think the committee sees that. I don't know, and I think the committee understands me here, I don't know if Texas can beat anyone. I don't know if Alabama can beat anyone. I think Ohio State can beat anyone. But Ohio State, because not even because the extra data point, but because they lost so late and they, you know, yeah, they don't have a conference championship game. You got to root for Texas, Alabama, and Florida State to lose, and preferably Washington to win. Or if Oregon wins, you have to hope Oregon blows out Washington so that you can say, well, they had one extra win, but we had a tougher schedule and we had a closer and better loss. There has to be a lot to happen for Ohio State to get in.
I think the most interesting discussion is going to be if Alabama beats Georgia. So let's say Alabama beats Georgia. Are you really not going to include the SEC champion in this year's playoffs? Because both of these teams, both Georgia and Bama, have played some of the toughest schedules in college football. Now, of course, Georgia didn't really play the most of their tough games until this past month of November, when they had to play Missouri, Ole Miss, Tennessee, and I don't even know how the hell Tennessee was still able to be ranked. But they got 3 ranked wins. right? And you dominated Ole Miss, who was pretty much essentially a top 10 team when you played them. So yeah. I still don't think that you could disinclude Georgia with one loss. But at the same time, Alabama beats you, right? How does Alabama get in? Because let's say Texas beats Oklahoma State, and then whoever wins the Pac-12 championship, really Alabama still kind of needs help. Unless you're just going to have Alabama screwing over somebody, and if that's the case, who is most likely to get screwed over? Texas? I doubt that, because Texas still has the head-to-head, and they've been pretty consistent with that. So for Alabama, if they have a shot at trying to get in, if they beat Georgia, they need Florida State to lose, and they need Texas to lose. And then the argument comes, you know, are you going to put Alabama in over Ohio State? Which at that point, you probably should, because they have that extra data point. They won their conference, and they should be rewarded for that. Plus, they played just as difficult as a schedule as Ohio State. Yep. But meanwhile, what happens to Georgia? Is there still a chance that they get left out? Because at this point, you know, Washington will have one loss. Oregon will have one loss. And yes, they would have won their conference, but Georgia still has played just as difficult as a schedule as those other teams. And the committee has been so inconsistent with how they've ranked these teams. It's like with certain teams, they choose to favor strength of schedule more so than the other teams, right? But then with the other teams, when they're not using strength of schedule as a evaluation metric, then they want to use the eye test. So at that point, who would be the better team in the committee's eyes in this situation, Ohio State or Georgia, if we're trying to find a way that two SEC teams get in?
Well, Georgia, this is what's hysterical. The committee has never dropped the number one team in the country too many places. They haven't. Not in con. Well, I have to think about that one. They have, but only in like a chaos year, like 2017. So they could do that this season because of the amount of undefeated teams. If everything stays constant, Pac-12 championship game is good and close. Michigan wins. Florida State wins, Texas wins, and then but Alabama beats Georgia, the SEC realistically could get left out. I think if Georgia loses, they're dead. Their playoff hopes are dead instantly. This is a must-win game, because even if Georgia loses, but other teams lose as well, they're not safe. Texas loses and Georgia loses. Well, Alabama gets in, but Georgia's left out. And then you're left with Florida State, Michigan, and Pac-12 and Alabama. So Georgia needs to win, because if they lose, they're like, they'd get in over Ohio State, I think. But there's an argument for that not to happen, because Georgia's played the much weaker strength of schedule than OSU. And OSU, no matter what, would have the better loss, because they lost to an undefeated team on the road. Georgia lost to a one-loss team neutral site. They have to win if Georgia wants to get in. That's just my opinion, though.
Now, my last scenario is this. Okay, we already know that the Pac-12 champions are locked to get in, but if FSU loses, and let's say Georgia wins, are we sure the committee is going to put Texas in over Ohio State?
Oh, I'm pretty sure. Texas has the worst loss by a mile compared to Ohio State, because Michigan would blow out Oklahoma and that game would not be close. But Texas has the more impressive win. Even though I think Penn State and Alabama are pretty darn similar, is it more impressive to beat Alabama on the road or Penn State at home?
More impressive to beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa. They barely
lose
there.
Of course. Of course. Even though I personally, spoiler alert, have Penn State ranked one spot ahead of Alabama, Alabama on the road is no doubt the more impressive win. And they have conference championship, which is only going to boost their strength of schedule. And they have an extra win. They're 12-1. Ohio State's 11-1. let me see the rankings. Texas, I'm not completely confident because Oklahoma State is also viewed similar to Iowa. So unless Texas just blows out Oklahoma State, I could see them putting Ohio State in over them. But we'll have to see.
All right, everyone. This is it for this episode of the JT Sports Podcast. Before you get out of here, leave a like, subscribe to the channel. Most importantly, subscribe to our guy, College Football with Sam. Always a great time when he comes on. We definitely are going to have him on the pod a lot more in 2024, man. And before we let you get on out of here, man, let the people know where they can find you and what you have planned for the channel within the closing months of 2023.
You just can type in College Football with Sam in the search bar. It'll be the first thing that shows up. And there will be plenty of videos for the playoff games. Plenty of them. That's the big plan, really, is I'll have so much time because the playoff games are a month after they're announced that there will be like multiple videos per playoff game, like going deep into the matchups, quarterback comparison. There'll probably be like an early preview and prediction, and then a week beforehand preview and prediction. So it's going to be a lot of exciting stuff covering the bowl games and all those matchups. It'll be awesome.
If you enjoyed this episode of the JT Sports Podcast, leave us with a like, subscribe to the channel. Remember that every episode of the podcast that's uploaded on the channel is available in audio format on all podcasting platforms. Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcast from, you can find the JT Sports Podcast. Leave us with a 5-star review. Share this episode with your friends, family members, and acquaintances. And I appreciate you guys for coming on, man. And I will see you guys shortly with another episode.